Mahalabai. O ka aha malami ni kukuna o mau nila nai. Kia kala ni kumahiku o api lila. And everyone is present except for Kalani Omi Kaitola, yeah? Okay. So first thing is the January minutes. They're pretty long, so hopefully you have time to look over the email. The March minutes not called yet, so we're just looking at January. Take a look. That's a lot of transcribing there.
Yeah, yeah.
Mahalo.
Oh man.
That's part of the reason why the march is not all yet.
Yeah.
But I do have I think I sent you guys copies of that march yesterday in the email. I do have copies right here if you guys.
Okay, to refer to.
I just want to take a look at it because I know item A on this agenda is the same as the march agenda. So. And one more thing about the minutes, if I may, Madam Chair. I do post the minutes, the draft minutes, on the SHPE website. I don't know if anybody has ever gone on there, but as soon as I follow with the draft minutes, I'll put it on. That way it's available. And then I'll bring it before the council and for the next meeting. So similar to the January minutes, I completed that, I think, shortly after the March meeting, and I put it immediately on the website.
Can I get a motion to accept?
I move that we accept the minutes.
A second.
Okay. All in favor of accepting January's? Aye. Any opposed? Okay. Motion carries.
I'm sorry. I wanted to add something to
you do. Okay. Sorry. So we have to. How do I do that?
We don't have to yet. If we can have a little discussion, then, okay.
Is anything needing to be changed?
I'm hoping not.
Okay.
In the Hawaii Administrative Rules 13-284, and I think it's C, there's a section that recognizes the importance of family and cultural history, oral and oral mm-hmm. histories.
Yep.
And I wanted to make sure that that was included as a reason why we made the distinction for cultural descendancy for Misahia. Because there's mm-hmm. still the other side that feels we should have had a more definitive definition when it came to buried.
Buried, right, yeah. Right. And that was, and if you look in the minutes, that was the yeah, main point,
gave,
right?
Yeah, she gave a lot of history for that area, yeah. So I would think that it would meet that
right.
criteria.
Yeah, that if a body is covered in a battle, whether or not that constitutes a burial, and I think all of us agreed, or I don't remember how the vote went, but yeah, it was unanimous.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm good on that.
Okay. So now
do we need to add anything?
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So does that motion stand then?
Yeah.
Are we gonna do them again? Stands.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's the January minutes. We'll get to the March one later, but I can pass it out now, so everyone can refer to the part on item A that we're going to now, which is. The draft burial treatment plan for Ibi Kupuna at 439 Waianae Street. And we are going to discuss and recommend whether to accept this proposed BTP that we've heard. Go ahead.
Good morning, Council. Lisa Martino Hazita, Archaeologic Services Hawaii, and Eco Quintus is here today. Yes, we are here to request a determination from the council for a residential parcel in Lahaina. The determination is for preservation in place. And as we discussed at the last meeting, Keamoku Kapu is a recognized cultural descendant. So we worked with him on this burial treatment plan and the long-term measures. At the last meeting, we discussed the long-term measures to protect this individual in place, and those are listed on pages 14 through 16, and 16 is the diagram. There will be a 10-foot buffer on all sides except on the south side where there will be a 5-foot buffer. And this was because of the utility easement. We determined that there's about 1.6 feet between the south side where the buffer is and where the start of the utility easement will be. So we kind of talked about that last time. Let's not pull the buffer exactly up to the utility easement. Additionally, in that easement, it's a 10-foot easement. All of the utilities, which is just electrical and cable, will be shifted to the 5-foot southern side. So you will have an additional buffer, no build zone. There's just not the formal buffer. And there will be a platform marking this individual 3 foot by 3 foot by 2 foot high with the ahu, the upright boulder. We have signage proposed that says Native Hawaiian Burial Site, the state site number 50-50-03-8501, Kapu, please respect this area. And additional protective measures would be regradation. It'll be we will get meets and bounds of the preservation area, and eventually it'll be recorded at the Bureau of Conveyances, as well as on all the future construction plans.
Lisa, your utility line area, has it been tested?
It has.
It has?
It has, yes.
And then, because it's electrical, you'll have a concrete cap?
Yeah, they usually do a concrete jacket over the...
Okay.
And it's shallow, it's probably gonna be maybe a foot and a half deep, and we had in that, well, we already tested the corridor anyway, but we did have up to about 3 feet of disturbance in some areas, 2 feet to 3 feet.
Oh yeah, so the depth of the electrical and the utility is what?
They're about 1.5 feet.
And then that's the entire length of the...
Yes.
Lisa, just real quickly, do you know, the landlords, are they planning on selling the property anytime soon, or are they just...
It's supposed to be like a family.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, for their kids.
Okay. And their thing is they're willing to maintain it. At least you've gotten verbal confirmation
Yes.
they're willing to maintain
Yes.
and protect it. Okay.
Yeah, they wanted to do preservation in place once
Yeah.
they found out. And
okay.
The wife is part Hawaiian.
Yeah, part Hawaiian. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Any other questions for Lisa?
Pretty straightforward. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Is there any public testimony on this issue, in this matter?
Nobody signed up.
Okay.
I'll make a motion that the Maui Lanai Island Burial Council accepts the burial treatment plan and burial component of a preservation plan for site 50508501, located at a parcel in Lahaina Town, Paunau, Ahupua'a, Lahaina District, Island of Maui, TMK 246006, portion of 017.
I second.
Okay, motion made by Scott, seconded by Kahele. All in favor of accepting this, or recommending to SHPD and accepting this proposed burial treatment plan? Yeah.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion carries.
Just one caveat. I think, like Leanne pointed out, this is our kuleana, so we don't make the recommendation to SHPD. We accept this.
Oh, we
yeah,
accept.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just like with the descendants, I think that came up some time ago. Like we accept them.
Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair, I think to make it cleaner, I think two motions: one to preserve in place or relocate, and then the second motion to accept.
Okay.
The draft BTP as written.
Okay.
Okay.
So just that would be just be the so we'll
one
do the
additional.
We already accepted the draft. So what we'll do is the Maui Lanai Island Burial Council recommend, that's a recommendation,
right,
that the Iwi Kupuna at associated with the burial treatment plan and burial component of a preservation plan for site 50508501, located at parcel in Lahaina Town, Paunau, Ahupua'a, Lahaina District, Island of Maui, be preserved in place.
Okay.
That's a recommendation.
That's a recommendation, and then we accept the burial treatment plan. So the we're doing a little bit in reverse order, because normally I think you'd want it in place and then you'd want to, but
okay.
Yeah, so.
Because it's in the AIS. So
yeah, exactly.
Okay.
And I was confused by the wording on here.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have a motion to recommend preservation in place.
Kahele Duclo seconding.
All right, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, that motion carries as well. Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Okay, mahalo.
Thank you very much.
All right, moving on to item B. This is a cultural descendancy recognition of Foster Ong Kong to Iwi Kupuna at Maui Lani Phase 6 and Maui Lani Phase 9, Wailuku Ahupua'a, Mokuo Waidishu Island of Maui, TMK 3-8-099 and 2-3-8-007-153.
So I'm just going to read off the letter of recommendation that should be drafted to the council. So for the purpose of establishing and substantiating a cultural descendant claim to unidentified human skeletal remains located at the above locations, the named individual has submitted his application and genealogical information to the Department of Land and Natural Resources State Historic Preservation Division, SHPD, for assessment. and verification pursuant to Hawaii Administrative Rules 13-335. So the administrative rules require that the applicant provide evidence that they have genealogical connections to an ancestor who once resided or is buried or both in the Ahpua of Wailuku. An ancestor is defined as one from whom a person is descended and who is usually more remote in the line of descent than a grandparent. In this case, the applicant provided a combination of birth certificates, death certificates, and oral testimony that demonstrated the applicant's connection to an ancestor who once resided in the Ahupua'a of Wailuku. And so pursuant to the above Hawaii administrative rules, SHPD recommends that the Maui Lanai Islands Barrel Council recognize Mr. Foster Aupau as a cultural descendant to the above unidentified human skeleton remains.
Okay. Before we begin discussion, I just want to say that I'll recuse myself from my interview.
Okay. Thank you, Zulian. Casey is recusing herself from this item. Thank you.
Oh, no, I didn't.
I'm just waiting to see if Foster's coming. Yeah. Foster's coming up, and we have the multiple of them.
Hi, good morning, everybody. As I've said in previous appearances, I'm willing and open to sharing my genealogy with the council members. However, I ask that if that's the case, we do so in the executive session.
So we need a motion. So MLIBC makes a motion to, or makes a motion to. I usually write these things down. Like, wait, MLIBC recommends that we proceed to executive session.
Okay. Seconded by Kanale Duplo. All right. So I call my Paulette. We need to ask you to step out for a minute.
Excuse me, Chair.
Yes.
I'm okay with Bernie Kalani Kau.
Kohana,
Bernie,
okay.
Yeah, and obviously my son.
Okay.
Yeah. Thank you.
Just
call you back.
Yeah.
You sure?
Yeah.
We're getting there.
Yeah, yeah.
Thank you.
Could I see the paperwork as please?
Yeah, I didn't look at it yet. I don't want to wait till you.
Oh, no.
Can?
No, okay. I appreciate the opportunity.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
All right.
I thought it was Jeopardy. Okay, you guys want me to start? Okay, so, normally, and actually I could do this simply from my oral knowledge from my tutus, my mother's, my aunts, but there are some notes that I may have to refer to. So I was born in Wailuku in 1958. My mother, her maiden name is Emma Kimokeo. She is from Lahaina. She was born in Keka, what today is known as Kahanawale. It is through her that my lineal descent all the way to Mo'ipi'ilani, and that's who I'm going to take us to. And so I am the 13th lineal descendant of Pi'ilani. So I'm just one of the branches, as we know. So I may jump from tutu to tutu, but then later on I'll show you the connections, you know, from me to Pi'ilani. And so there's a couple of genealogies that I'm gonna reference. The first one, obviously, it ties me to my great-grandfather, Timoteo Ke Kahuna. And he was born in Hono, Hawaii, back in 1860. And his son, Palenapi Kimokeo. Mother is Kahanui Kaleohana. She was born in Puleonui. Mm. She grew up in Laie and on Molokai in Halawa Valley. Mm. Before marrying my tutu man, Timoteo Kekumuna, and coming into Lahaina in 1810. They were brought to Lahaina by Chief Naihu. In a lot of the documents, you will see that he's referred to as Chief Naihu. He was one of Kamehameha's war chiefs when he came to the Battle of Kipaniwai and the Battle of Niuwana. So, Timoteo Kekahuna, my great grandfather, he's the son of Kekahuna and Waikane. Kekahuna was born on Molokai, right after the Battle of Niuwana. Some of the references, anybody's curious, probate 183, probate 1169. Court took place in the 1860s, 1870s. My family was awarded several dozen kuleana. That's all well documented. So it is Kekahuna, my great-great-grandfather. He is the son of Iaukea. Iaukea was one of the war chiefs of Kamehameha that came into Kipaniwai to Molokai and then to Nu'uanu, and after the battle, and again, it's all referenced in witness testimonies in this probate, he came back to Molokai and he fathered my great-great-grandfather, Kekahuna. He is also the father of Keawe'iwi, so they're two brothers. And so a lot of my family mistaken Keawe'iwi and Kekahuna as being the same person, but no. In my research, I was able to obtain all the documents and the archives that showed that Keawe'iwi was the elder, and he carried the ancestral name of Keawe'iwi. My great-great-grandfather carried the title name of Kekahuna, and he was the younger brother, but they grew up in Kamalo, in Wailua, and finally in Halawa. As in 1819, when Kamehameha Akahi went to Halawa, Kepunani and the kids moved to Mo'ula. Growing up, my mother's stories, which never really sat with me, simply because I was too busy surfing, you know, having fun and what have you. But she would always recount genealogy and the family history. She would sit in a rocking chair, play ukulele, and she'd be singing all these songs, and then she would stop and she would say, well, you know, our family is, you know, we come from the E family. And in my mind, I was like, E who? You know? And a few times that I said, oh, Ma, what is, you know, who is that? You know, Pimsi, yeah, Kong Tehe, Kulkuli Tepeyao, you know, that kind of thing. I went through a hard time in my family life, so there was a separation. And then when, one of the reasons why I got into the genealogy was I needed to understand my mother. You know, I knew she didn't turn her back on me because she didn't love me, but I needed to find out why. And so I knew through the genealogy, which I was pushing away since I was in high school. You know, uncles, aunties would come in, you know, to me and my cousins and say, hey, you know, come with me, I'm gonna show you. We don't like little sir, little play. But then during that experience, I figured, well, the only way I'm gonna learn anything is by jumping into it. So it was interesting because I had a couple of dreams, and please allow me to explain this because it helps you with the foundation as well as the context and why my okay, I gotta skip that. So, when I did decide to fully embrace, you know, the journey, the research, I discovered that my family ties to Waiokama, to Waine'e, to Mo'ula, wasn't just by my mother, my aunts, her sisters, her cousins, our tutus, mo'olelo to me, kuma'i'o, but it stretched all the way back to Pi'ula. And I found the connectors, so now I jump back to Iaukea, my great-great-great-grandfather, three greats. He is the son of Kuli'i, Kekane, and Kepo'okalani Wahine. Kepo'okalani Wahine is the half-sister of Iaukea Nui. And so my mother's account is that we all Iaukea. And so I said, oh, you mean the Iaukea in the book? She goes, yeah. So I'm just like, well, how? Again, you know, comp on the head, kuli kuli pepe out. And I learned that my family's oral genealogy, they had all the dots, and they threw it on the wall, but they didn't explain the connection. And so that's what I was left with. And because I was going through this time in my life and I was searching for answers, I really got into it. And so I discovered that Kepo'o Kalani is the daughter of I'A'ahu. And I'a'ahu is a chief from the Big Island. But then here, my mom is saying, see, for my mom, she always mentioned the Ali'i ties on the Big Island. But it was her two elder sisters who would tell me, oh, but Foster, we I'ilani too. And I would think, how? You know, again, you know, there was no, you know, expanding on that. So I'a'ahu is I, son of Ahu. And so this genealogy was documented and recorded in what's known as the Makainana genealogy. And in 1881, the Makainana, there were several people that came from that office or that mandate by Kalakaua, came to Lahaina, to my tutu's house in Aki, and interviewed my great-grandfather, Timoteo Keko, interviewed my great-grandmother. And I did not mention, but the notes, can you keep it private?
Yeah.
Not to. Yeah. So in 1881, they came and interviewed my tutu. And when I asked my mom, how come they did that? And she said, oh, they were tasked with going around the islands and interviewing the family of the Ali'is, the surviving family members. And so it was my great-great-grandfather, Kekuna, he had already passed away in 1879. But my great-great-grandmother, Waikani, was alive. My great-grandfather, Timoteo, my great-grandmother, Ka'ahunui. And so in this genealogy, which was published in 1896 in the Makainana newspaper, you see it ends with my great-grandparents, Timoteo and Ka'ahunui. But then what you see is you see my great-great-grandparents, my great-great-great-grandparents, my great-great-great-grandparents, and my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, I'a'ahu. And so that's all documented in this genealogy. Now, we jump to the genealogy that's cited and known in Kamakau, David Malo, as well as Fernander, and which has been studied by several academics and scholars like Lili Kala, Edith McKenzie, Pui, who are the others that are cited in there, Kehau Abad, that has gone over these things, and then they've laid out the genealogy. And so there is Ahu A'i, Ahu, son of I. And so my great-great-great-great-great-grandfather, I'a'ahu, is the son of Ahu A'i. And Ahu A'i is the son of I. Okay, so I is mentioned in my Tutu Keawe Iwi's probate 1-3. His is mentioned not just by him, I mean his wife and his son, Keawe Iwi Opio, but also by several of the witnesses that testified in that proceeding. My mother mentioned E. My aunts, uncles all said, this is your tutu man, E. I at that time, I didn't know who he was or what the connection was. And so when I started to do further research and I discovered that E is the lineal descendant of Pi'ilani, as well as Umi Aliloa on the Big Island. And so then I put two and two together where part of my mom's story, part of my aunt's story is, okay, that's why they talked about the Big Island and the Maui lines. What is interesting is that there were things that came to me that I cannot explain. But what I also discovered is that on E's father, Makua, he is related to P.E. Lani through his daughter, P.E. Kale. Mm-hmm. And I call him my. His wife, Ku'alu, who is the mother of Ahu A'i, is a lineal descendant of P.E. Lani by Kalani He'ana, the other daughter. So I'm related to P.E. Lani by the two daughters, P.E. Kea as well as Kalani He'ana. And so that is my descent, the line. And so when I laid it all out, and like I said, the Maka'inlana genealogy, which ties me, my body, you know, my birth, everything, to my great-grandfather, and then to I'a'au. And then from that genealogy goes into the other genealogy that ties me into Ilani, you know, by way of the two daughters. And so E is my, he is the fourth generation from P.E. Lani. And it's his father and his mother that taught me straight. So I hope that kind of, you know, confused everybody. Sorry.
So who are E's parents?
Makua. Makua is Dakane. And hold on.
That's Makua. Kaumanamana.
Yeah, right there. See, but my mother always refers to him, and my relatives all said Makua. They didn't know his full name. And so we knew him as Makua, yeah? And I met several Makuas, you know, in my travels. And so, just so you know, the Maka'inana genealogy that I'm speaking about Timoteo, is on page 63. And the chief's genealogy is on page, is in genealogy book number 44, page 13 and 14. And then the mother for E, to answer your question, Kaele, is Kapohe Lemai. And so, you know, for me, preservation of our tutus Ivi is my concern. Period. And I honestly didn't want to step into the Maui Lani thing simply because, you know, a lot was already going on, so I didn't want to add to any more confusion or what have you. But, you know, it came a time I felt like, well, you know, like I said, certain things started to happen. I was about to share with you and it went off, so that's why I don't.
So for the Maui Lani, or for this, for the Wailuku ancestor, are you looking at E or are you looking at P.E.?
You know, honestly, Chair, I can go the Maui line and I can go the Bigali line.
Yeah.
The reason why I don't want to go the Bigali line, and this is something that I had extensive conversations with my mom. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my feelings and my position comes from my upbringing, although at the time I could never articulate it or express it. But my family that came from Big Island were the invaders. They were Maui. They came to kill the Maui family. I'm being honest. I'm not. You know, I mean, my mother looked at me and said, "Yeah."
Also married to the sister, though, right? He was invading.
I mean, a lot of people today would love to, you know, and I get it. You know, talk about and they're proud about their ancestry like that. But you know. Just to give you an idea, and again, I'm sorry for the little tangent, but it does play into this. When I first started helping Kabibihe in Loa, to this day, I cannot particular the food, but I would put my blood and my sweat into that aina. You know why? Because my tutus would spill blood on that aina. And a lot of it was my wife's family from Wai'eku. And so, for me, I stand on P.E. Lani. And all the tutus that come from P.E. Lani, and not only my direct lineage, but also all, you know, like I told Kahele, I mean, there's one else. There's a saying she said long ago that I really hold dear. We all related, no matter what. Hawaiians related. And so That's why I'm saying, you know, standing on P-Line, not the big Alin Ohana, I love them. So, but they were my way.
Mahalo. Questions?
Well researched, very well.
I'm probably going to be a stickler for a point here, but we've had others come before us with documents that we weren't able to prove, and I appreciate that. The documentation is already recorded in books, but we don't have it in front of us to look. I'm not familiar with that genealogy. And so I would have to base my decision either on what I know, which isn't a lot, or on what you folks think you know. So maybe just at this time, because I don't have that genealogy in front of me to see. I mean, I know he goes up, he has proof all the way up to Kekohuna, but I don't know anyone before that or anyone that we can connect to Wailuku. Mainly because I don't know the genealogy, mm-hmm. and I haven't been given anything that shows me where it's at. Yeah.
So maybe we can maybe ask Foster, can you be a little bit more explicit then about the Wailuku connection? I mean,
Or if you have a copy of the Maka'inanna genealogy.
Yeah.
I have a copy. I don't have the copy of the entire book.
Yeah.
But I do have
that
a copy
your
of the page.
One would be good, right. Yes.
Is that what you're asking for? Yeah. Can you look at them, but.
Thank you.
Better give them back. I think I highlighted,
yeah? You guys verified his docs. Yeah.
Thank you. Well, maybe we can ask you. I mean, what did you base your recommendation? What did the department base recommendation on?
The result, the oral testimony. So okay. He was able to provide just a few generations back through Pala Pala, and it was his oral testimony.
Okay. And the connection to Peter.
And also just to make note, the other documentations that I submitted for the other cultural descendancy claims are all the same ones. In addition to this, I didn't submit in those others, but I'm adding it here. Yeah.
China, what was the law? 1300, 285, the rule.
284 talked about. I think it's 284C, 1, 2, or 3, mm-hmm. but it talks about. What's cultural history, a known cultural history, and that's why I felt anything that's printed, like in Fernandez or Kamakau, would be good to have. Mm. But we don't have that kind of documentation.
But this is sufficient for you.
Yeah, it shows that he's gone back far enough, and I think if you go back that far, that you're going to connect to somebody that's going to be in Wailuku. It's an assumption I'll put my life on.
Yeah, exactly.
I do want to know something else, too. back in 2011, there was a filing in Second Circuit Court by Pioneer Mill, quiet title case.
In 2011?
In 2011. And in that case, it was to quiet title to 5 LCAs that were registered in my Tutu Center that I just all talked about. And the summons for that case, I have copies of the summons here that shows my name. My tutu's names, and it also shows Timoteo Kekouna's name. And the reason why I'm bringing that up is because in that quiet title case, Michael Gibson, who's the attorney for the Pioneer Mill. If any of you are familiar with him, every week he goes to the Bureau of Trovans and he does the research for his clients and they pull up all the land titles. Mm-hmm. And as you know, a lot of the recordings have genealogies in them. And so when I got this summons in 2011, it was for lands that my mother told us about growing up, that, you know, you have Kuleana land up here, da-da-da, in Upki. So when this came in, it, one of them was the land my mother was telling me about, Orly. Mm. And then also, these are lands where Timoteo Tekomuna, Ka'ahanui, who you were questioning, yeah, are buried with Kekahuna and Waikane. They're buried there. And so after the quiet title case, I filed burial registrations with Kealana and SHBD, and I got it all registered. So their graves, because the last, my uncle Kaipo Kimokeo was 3 years old when he watched them put my great grandmother Kahanui into the ground. And he said she was buried right there, and he pointed to her grave. So he's the first person source. And then he passed it on to me and I did all my documentation. So the genealogy that I give you guys, the, my tutus are buried there in Lahaina right now. And fortunately, one of my cousins are still living on that land. And he's helping me care for the Ibi. And also, this is through oral conveyance by my mother and my aunts and uncles. Kealbi Ibi is also buried here in this lot. But getting back to this quiet title case, the attorneys all know who are the descendants. And this is the descendants to this paper I just showed you here, right here. And also too, Joanna, if you remember, Yukon Aloha Goma and Kawi came to the service of notice. You guys submitted you guys' name to the genealogy.
And what was the, just out of curiosity, what was the result? Did you, were you able to retain the land?
No. I was the only one that challenged it. Everybody else sold out.
Wow.
I challenged it on a jurisdictional issue, which obviously we get bossed up in court. So Rhonda Lou was the judge. When we went to court, she had on plain clothes and undercover cops that were intimidating me, and Dexter Kayama made a special appearance on my behalf. So I put in all the paperwork. My aunts who raised Darryl and Ken and I raised money to cover the copying and paper stuff. So I fought it all the way. And I don't want no money, I don't want none of that. Right. You know, when we stand up and defend for our tutus ibi, it's not about money, it's not about making deals. It's about protecting the ibi, that's it. And just so you know, me and my family, my son and my wife, already have experienced that with the Hyatt burials from 2013. Mm. And so we did that. We went in, you know, I mean, that's a whole other story. That's an interesting one too, but it's another story. But no, we lost that case, and then that's why I registered my tutus graves and, you know, trying to protect it as much as can. It got auctioned off. Somebody bought it.
You didn't have your genealogy at that time.
No, I had it all.
Mm-hmm. So do
I have everything. All the paperwork. See, okay. my in 1981 when I 1980 when I got discharged from the service, I was at my auntie's house where these burials are. And my uncle came in and he looked at me and he said, "Oh, you know, I talk to you." So I was what, 21, 22. And he said, "Oh, you know, he let me help him with the genealogy." But at that time, all I saw that anytime there was land, Hawaiians fight. So I never liked that energy. Yeah. But I remember he showing me the original deeds from the Mahele with the red stamp. And so I turned, you know, I rejected that offer. And then in 1999, after things went bad with my mom and I went to his house in Kenai. And I found out that those deeds were all stolen from him. Oh. But I went, say, "Okay, uncle, I'm ready." So, yeah. But just so, and one more thing that, that might help, you know, if you have any doubts, Joanna, is that...
No, I don't.
Is that the... In 1996, I got involved with a canoe project in Lahaina. And that is when I first heard of Kihaue. And so, that's, you know, I was helping to build the double hokono. I was, me and four other guys were one of the original five that built the canoe from day one. Things went cuckoo, I left, but my canoe was already done. And I was sailing it ever since then. And I know that's why, you know, I'm here.
Mahalo.
Yeah.
Mahalo.
Okay, can we
close?
Close,
oh, yes, we have to close executive session.
Okay, MLIBC makes a motion to close executive session.
Second.
Okay,
right.
Seconded by Dean. All in favor?
Aye.
Okay,
aye.
Close.
All right. Thank you.
Mahalo.
Mahalo. You're doing pretty good today.
Well,
don't say that yet. Hello.
Oh, hello? Yeah. Let me give you a minute. Once again, I have a wonderful there you go.
Okay, so we're, if I come, we're going to open for public testimony if there is any on this.
Anybody want to testify on Foster's Culture Desiderancy application? Set up your seat.
Nope. Okay, we're good. We can make our decision then.
Okay. I move that we accept the cultural descendancy application from Foster Ampong.
Second.
To, should I say to the to Wailuku?
Wait, let me
read the whole.
To identify human skeletal remains at Maui Lani Phase 6 and Maui Lani Phase 9, Wailuku Ahupua'a Moku of Wailuku, Island of Maui.
Second.
Kahele made a motion to recognize Foster Ampong. Dean made second. Any discussion? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries. Mahalo. Okay. Okay. Okay, that's business for now, today. Our next section is on inadvertent discoveries and correspondence. So letter A is the an update regarding inadvertent discovery of Ulupukuna at Maui Community Correction Center, reported to the Maui Office of the State Historic Preservation Division on January 29, 2019. Who's up?
You up?
Oh,
yes. Today, I hope.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Discovery was reported during the last burial council meeting. We didn't know all the details at that point. Since that meeting on March 28th, cultural surveys conducted an initial investigation of the air conditioning system dry well, which was the location of the find. This is about a 5 by 5 foot excavation that was completed by hand in the small walkway between dorm 3 and the programs building shown on the overall site plan. We arrived on site, conducted 100% screening of all the backfill material from the excavation. It was during the screening that we found a number of bullets and shell casings, which we understand are related to the use of the area as a police clubhouse and gun range prior to the construction of the prison. Also during the screening, we found a number of nails, which we identified at that point as coffin nails based on characteristics. So we inspected the actual excavation, cleaning up the loose material, and at that point we observed a coffin-shaped pit that had been excavated into the lithified sand at the base of the excavation. Carefully inspected the pit and identified a faint wood coffin outline. So through that investigation, we determined this is a historic coffin burial at this location. Only a portion of the skull of the burial was disturbed when it was originally excavated without archaeological monitors on site. Our osteologist was able to identify that portion of the skull related to the burial as an adult male of Asian descent, which includes Polynesian Native Hawaiian, based on characteristics of the skull and teeth. The presence of the coffin indicates the burial is historic close contact. So then we started to do some research, and that's some of the maps that we presented. An 1882 map of the area shows several nearby land commission awards, but the project area and burial location are within an area that's undeveloped and shown as just the sand dune with no houses, LCAs, or anything. 1951 map shows the original Maui County Jail buildings and an adjacent cemetery labeled as Japanese Cemetery. The historic coffin burial is located beneath the footprint of the original jail and about 150 feet from the Japanese Cemetery. So there's no clear indication that the burial is related to the cemetery, but other than the fact that it's in proximity. Going forward, we have consulted with Johanna SHPD about burial treatment and options to complete the dry well in a different location. So in terms of burial treatment, one of the options proposed and being considered is the construction of a protective CMU or cinder block wall around the burial, which will be preserved in place. That's already been determined. Providing extra protection in that way, and we're still working on designing that. One of the concerns with that structure, though, is that by installing it, it may mean additional ground disturbance in that area. So that's something that we don't want. We'd rather not have any ground disturbance. So we'll keep working on that. The area will be reported by a licensed surveyor and with the Bureau of Conveyances. The location of the burial find will be backfilled. We're still working on surface treatment, but the idea is to restore the area back to its original condition, but to minimize, restrict access to this area. And it's an area that's not used often. It's not used by prisoners or for transport. It's just a kind of an access way between buildings that's mostly used for maintenance and inspection.
Sorry, Trevor, is it on the site plan? Where is it on this?
So near the middle, you'll see a dorm 3 and a programs
yes.
building.
Okay.
The existing program building.
Yeah, so it's the walkway between between the two.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you.
We talked about placing a sign or plaque in the general area, noting that this area contains human burials without drawing attention to the actual coffin. And we will be preparing a burial site component of the preservation plan to document all of this. But moving forward with the completion of the dry well for this area, the first thing that we've tried to do is challenge the project team with designing something that would minimize or eliminate any future ground disturbance. I think that's always the preference. And so this is already one last handout. This is new, Johanna, since we met, just kind of their proposal. So the original dry well was about 5 by 5 feet and 4 feet deep, and they're proposing to install a new dry well that's more or less on the surface, but it requires that the air conditioning water percolates into the ground. So ground disturbance for this installation would be about 8 inches maximum instead of the 4 feet. So that's
above the burial?
No, it'll be relocated away from the burial.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's good.
And the lines running to it all sub above surface.
Yeah. This is the only ground disturbance left for this project, would be installation of this dry well with 8 inches or so of excavation filled with gravel so that the water can percolate.
The area where you plan to put the new dry well or this thing, have you tested the area that you're considering?
It hasn't been tested, but one of the options on the table we've been consulting with is to conduct ground penetrating radar. If there are anomalies, we would avoid those anomalies with the location of this.
Could you clarify for me? You stated that the skull was determined to be of Asian descent, which included Polynesian and Native Hawaiian. And then the written report we got says that it's an adult Polynesian male. So is it clear that it's a Polynesian, or it's within that category of what may be? What else is included in Asian descent?
Probably better for our osteologist to explain, but it's a broad range of people represented within Asian descent, Polynesian being one. So it has characteristics of being most likely Native Hawaiian, but we slightly revised that into the broader Asian descent because of the research that we did with the Japanese cemetery in the vicinity. At this point, we just don't know.
Well, I think that needs to be clarified because it either falls in the Burial Council jurisdiction or the department's jurisdiction, depending on whether it's determined.
Well, it's an inadvertent find, so I'm not, we're just going to give recommendation. So I don't think we really have any jurisdiction at all, though, because it's an inadvertent find, rather than recommendation. Is that right?
Yeah.
But do we usually even do recommendations on Native?
No, we don't, but I think the idea here is that with a high likelihood that it could be, I mean, it's a 100% likelihood that it's one or the other, probably, but I think...
Or someone with a combination of both.
But
whoever you got to make this determination cannot say for sure whether it's
any of the cultural material found in the burial context didn't point in one way or the other.
So that would certainly help to answer the question, but once we found the common outline, we didn't do any more disturbance.
Yeah.
I had a concern when they told me about the coffin, because it says that it's a newer burial, right? Mm-hmm. Closer to the present. And it suggests to me that they did burials there. It was planned. Mm-hmm. It was intentional. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking there's more everywhere, mm-hmm. anywhere else in that area.
Rather than just one random burial out kind of in the middle.
And you know, if you look at the map that he has here, the old map, before the place was built, it shows the
right
dunes in that area.
I think it's, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong, but if we look at Upiha, and we have different cultures, ethnicities all layered on top of each other, and it's kind of a common practice, I think.
Yeah.
If not Hawaii, but Maui, I would say.
Yeah.
So,
Well, the question I came up with was, well, not a question, but I told him, it suggests a burial ground.
Yeah.
And as such, we've never talked about burial grounds, but we might consider designating that area as a burial ground. Simply because we haven't seen the rest doesn't mean there's nothing there. And that's the thing, when they did this dry well, they moved it over, but it doesn't tell us what's underneath. And just because we can't see what's underneath doesn't mean that it should be okay.
Yeah. I mean, that area is pretty much at max build out, though, isn't it?
No, I don't think there's going to be much more than that.
Yeah.
No, there's more projects.
There are more projects planned?
There's more projects in the facility.
Huh.
So that dry well is basically just to catch excess water that's coming off?
Dripping off the AC unit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you guys are going to use GPR to determine where that would be in that area?
Yeah, that was our recommendation.
And you're the lead, you folks are the lead firm that conducts the actual GPR testing.
Yeah.
Right on. Now we got you in front of us.
Got me. I am, and I'm happy to answer questions. I am planning to also present on another project that will have a GPR component at the next meeting.
Can I just ask you what your depth will be when you test this area with the GPR that you're going to be using?
It depends on the receiver you use, but the receiver we have is can go 10, 15 feet, depending on conditions.
Okay.
Yeah, it works well in sand, dry sand. If you're encountering water table or hard clay, then that affects the signal and can't go as deep. So in this area, that's what we'd be targeting, is about 10 feet.
So how long have you guys been using GPR on Maui?
On Maui?
Or your company?
As a company, since 2010. Yeah, for projects all over the state, large and small. But
so
we're still learning.
Is your practice, because I heard you mention that if you find an anomaly, you'll move someplace else. So is your common practice when you find an anomaly is to avoid it, or is it to investigate it?
Those are the two options on the table. We would propose that to anyone, consult with anyone on those two options, whether a project can be designed just to avoid an anomaly, or if the anomaly should be tested. So we've seen both in our work.
Mm-hmm.
Is it matters if you really need to build in that area, rather than
or if there are concentrated
burials
in that area. Mm-hmm.
Or that. So you guys haven't done any GPR so far?
No, not
okay.
This project.
I think, Johanna, your point that since this is clearly a sand dune matrix from many years ago, the odds of running into more burials if work is planned is high.
Mm-hmm. Well, the odds of often burials, if it's a Japanese cemetery or part of it, that would make it high too.
Right. Yeah.
The current project that we're kind of hired to see through is the ground disturbance ends with this dry well, but Joanna is correct. They kind of talk about future plans. They could add more buildings, fire alarm upgrades, other things like that that involve trenching in the future.
Because we came to the issue of markers, I suggested not a marker there, but there should be a marker in a more visible area that recognizes that it's a burial ground, not just one burial. It does a couple things. It keeps anonymity. It also shows that there's a lot more to be thinking about when you're in this area.
And that's what you had suggested earlier, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, okay.
So what goes on top of this after you folks restore the area? Is there a walkway that's going to?
Still up, it's up for discussion. But the thought is to restore it to its original condition with the concrete. They wanted to pour the concrete wider than the walkway to identify where the burial is, but it would be restored to that.
So currently there's nothing, previous to your guys' testing, there was nothing there, or the discovery?
There was a concrete walkway.
Oh.
Yeah, that's all.
Would they be open to rerouting that walkway?
They're rerouting everyone. They're rerouting the pedestrians around the building. Any, you know, the common traffic will go around, so that will be rerouted.
Oh.
But they'd like to keep that walkway there. It's more of, I think it's more of a safety thing that they need to inspect around buildings, maintenance type activities, but it would be, it wouldn't be a day-to-day occurrence.
And then on that walkway, you would see a sign that says there are something to the effect of there are burials in this area.
Yeah, okay. I thought was to maybe place it at the end of the walkway, but it's up for discussion.
Yeah. We
place the sign.
There were two suggestions for the area. One was that the water be rerouted back through the plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And another suggestion was that it could be put into an irrigation system for that area. Both don't seem highly probable because of state building codes and standards for the facilities. But it still was a better idea. And you asked them if there was a chance that they would combine the building at any time, and they says no. For right now, no. So it's going to stay open.
Okay.
That would be my preference, that no concrete go back on top of the
area.
I'm not sure how you can get around it, but if you can make that suggestion, that would be my recommendation. I'm not sure if anybody else agrees.
No, no concrete walkway, you're saying?
Or over the burial.
Okay.
Because it's a natural surface.
Yeah. In the past, for some burials that were
preferred to keep,
exactly, like a built-in slab, and then covered it back, indicating the burial site number and the site number, and then backfill over it so it's not visible at all. Would you be comfortable with that, or?
I'll just leave that up to everybody.
Yeah. I think the benefit of that, of having something at least, or that indicates it, that there's a burial beneath it, is that in the future, you know, 20, 30 years from now, when kind of all this has been more or less forgotten, then if they come in, and then they somehow capping it so that if they start to dig again there, it would hit something hard.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Didn't Justin have a plan already for how they were going to cover that?
So the construction company kind of created a plan that would involve, for lack of a better word, more or less creating like a subterranean tomb around the burial, which would be created out of cinder blocks. It would go around the entire coffin area. It would be more or less water resistant by protection. It would be capped with, filled with clean sand and then capped with concrete.
Who recommended this?
The construction.
Oh, construction.
Yeah, we've consulted on a little bit. The concern now, once they see that plan, is that in order to install that, they're going to have to widen the excavation. So now they're kind of like, is it possible to just do a natural backfilling of clean sand? We can still do that concrete cap with a placard or something on it and then restore it to the surface.
That's a precast. I think maybe precast concrete and then just drop it in and just walk. Well, that depends.
The casket could not be moved at all without damaging it, right?
That's
what I would recommend.
It's just a faint stain of wood. That's all that's left.
Oh.
There's no way to move it without damaging.
Yeah. Okay.
Can I pose my question to the department now then? We have a coffin burial of Asian descent in the vicinity of a Japanese cemetery. Is it the department's intent to try to reach out to Japanese ethnic organizations? Since it's not clear whether it's a 50-50, whether it's Japanese or Hawaiian descent, or could be a mix.
At this point, I haven't had a talk with Branch Chief Hinana Rodriguez, but we've been approaching this as a Native Hawaiian burial up to this point. We've been looking at Chapter 13340, that's letter E, so where the human skeletal remains are reasonably believed to be Native Hawaiian. So we've been approaching it as we reasonably believe it to be Native Hawaiian. With the council, do you guys have recommendations that should we reach out and contact any Asian groups or anything like that?
I understand where the department was going because that was the initial determination of the osteologist, but they backed off on their determination. And so I just think it's reasonable to at least consult.
It was entertaining.
Or, you know, they may not respond. They didn't in the past to other cemetery plans.
Okay. Up to this point, we've been working primarily with Ms. Kamalu on the Burial Council.
So was your determination, I mean, was the decision to broaden your determination based solely on the proximity to the Japanese cemetery? And is the time period about the same?
Based on the actual, looking at the skeletal material, the determination was most likely made at Hawaiian. And the broadening really was based on the fact of the context of the burial. Yeah. That the traits are similar enough. And we were only looking at a very small amount of the skeleton to make that determination. And only for a very brief time. So we broadened it to Asian descent for that reason, mm-hmm. based on the context.
What about the time period?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Yeah.
The modern correctional facility was constructed in 1940. The prison, or the original jail that's shown on that map, is prior to that or around that time. So pre 1940, but we don't have better estimation.
But the
and the Japanese cemetery.
Yeah, what's the date of that?
Do you guys know what the time?
Not yet. No, we'll do more research on that.
Yes. 1868 would be when, after 1868 is when you had a huge influx of Japanese immigrants. So, I mean, is there any way to determine the age of it at this point?
So, it doesn't appear on the 1850s map. I guess that makes sense. It happened sometime during that time period. The only way we could really get more information, I mean, we will continue our research, historical research, but it would be to investigate grave goods, you know.
Yeah.
More kind of disturbing work.
I guess my thinking for the department is if you reach out to them, just kind of covering all bases, and if there's anything that they say that should be done dramatically different, then it should be explored. I mean, if they say, oh no, we want to remove it, I'm like, I don't expect they will, but if there's something that would diverge from the recommendations that we would make, then we could have a more in-depth conversation.
But also with the idea that we're not saying it's a Japanese burial.
Right, right.
Say, I mean, you know, maybe, I don't know how to case it, but, you know, because it's in proximity.
Sure. There's a
possibility. I think in the department reaching out, it's not, you know, what do you think we should do with the burial? It is, do you have any information that...
I see. So information first and then, yeah.
But also not saying we think this is related to this. It's just... These are the possibilities.
Possibilities, exactly. Because
Really
the possibilities are three, Hawaiian, Asian, mm-hmm. or mix. And that's really what we're looking at.
And it would have to have been between the years of 1868 and
after,
1940 or 30
Yeah.
Can I read what the law is saying?